This podcast is part of the Big Heads Media Podcast Network. Go to bigheadsmedia.com for more great podcasts.
I've regretted almost every interaction I've ever had with Kevin Horn, so. And yet I keep coming back for more.
What a beautiful way to start. Perfect sentiment to open this edition of the obligatory PSU podcast with our special guest, CEO of the Penn State Alumni Association, Paul Clifford. Paul, thanks for joining us.
Hey guys, thanks for having me. Excited to be on the show tonight.
Well, we're excited to have you.
Lizzle, let's go.
So
let's have some fun.
I've got campus icon and local influencer Mike the Mailman.
Hello, everybody.
OnwardState.com managing editor emeritus Kevin Horn.
And also former alumni council member. I was Paul's boss one time.
Ah, there you go. There you have it. Paul Clifford joining us. I'm Chris Buchanani. No Brandon Noble, at least not as yet. He might dive bomb the show later on. Who knows? But my apologies, by the way, to the good folks at CC Peppers. Of all the places that we talked about on our podcast last episode, man, CC Peppers is the one I heard from the most people. How could you leave them off the list?
But so, they still exist. That's why. CC Peppers is still a thing.
Yeah, I mean, see, you said that, but the CC Peppers, as you know it, is nothing compared to what it once was. It was, I mean, they were using right now, CC Peppers everywhere.
If you need, you go to CC Peppers if you need dope. But like, I assume back in the day, it was a little bit different. It was actually a hot spot.
Yes, I mean, you could still maybe get dope there. I don't know.
And Chris, you know, Chris, I'm also wondering if a lot of people finally got to realize that the Kevin Horn they hear and the Kevin Horn that we know, I mean, he was so sentimental about the waffle, the sub shop with the schedule and the Penn State scores. That's the real Kevin, the guy with a heart who loves Penn State from top to bottom. I mean, he loves.
As opposed to what, Michael?
Well, everyone always says he does this, he does that, he doesn't do this. He's a negative guy, but the true you came out. I felt really good about what you said about the sub shop, the Penn State sub shop. That was very nice.
Thanks, Mike.
I hope to appeal.
That's sweet, Mike, that you say that.
Oh, yeah.
I always when people come to me and complain about Kevin, I always tell them that he's orders of magnitude worse in person. And then, you know, I also tell him the truth, which is the only personality that's more unmanageable on set than Horns is yours, Mike, because you are a diva in the extreme. So anyway, enough about us. We're going to talk to Paul on the other side, talk about the Penn State Alumni Association, Penn State, all that good stuff. Grab your pencil and your paper. It's the obligatory PSU podcast.
I've wondered how President Nixon could know so little about Watergate in 1973 and know so much about college football in 1969.
This is the obligatory PSU podcast, presented by HappyValley.com. You've listened to all those other Penn State podcasts. Now, listen to another one.
Man, what took you guys so long to invite me on this thing?
That is an excellent question.
Been chomping at the bit to get on this show. I thought, you know, I've been nice to Kevin for so long.
First
think
mistake.
I might get a little an invite, and now I'm just so excited to be here.
Well,
this is the best podcast I've ever been on. That's produced at 8:30 on a Thursday night to be aired later. So it's an honor.
It's still, nevertheless, it's still stiff competition. So I do appreciate
real stiff competition with Paul's little coffee hours that he does with random washed up student leaders. We're still waiting for our invite for that, Mike. Or Paul. Sorry, I'm just yelling at Mike.
Wow. Wow.
I hope we can do it again in person sometime. The whole Zoom thing is starting to wear me out a little bit, but you know, you got to do what you got to do in these trying times.
Absolutely. So you got to, sponsors paid their money. You got to fulfill.
For sure. For sure. So let's right out of the gate, Paul, let's plug something. I'm sure you've got, you've always got something to plug. But plug something right out of the gate.
Look, I think the best way to stay connected to Penn State, the best way to tap into the power of the Penn State network is by becoming a member of the world's largest alumni association. Now, almost 174,000 strong. We are grateful for our members, and there's yet room for more. And so visit our website at alumni.psu.edu to become a member of the world's largest alumni association today.
You get a sweet magazine, the Penn Stater. Excellent magazine. Yeah. You get a nice calendar every year. I don't know. Does everybody make the calendar or only the life members? I don't know how that works. I'm a life member now.
Right now, every member gets the calendar.
Okay, I got the calendar hanging up right here, okay. Paul. So, it's good stuff, man. And let me tell you another benefit of joining the Alumni Association, and you can tell I'm telling the truth because I'm not being paid to say this. I have always taken it to heart that Notre Dame could totally, in the most dishonest, unscrupulous way possible, claims to have the largest alumni association in the world. But they cheat. You don't have to pay dues to join the Alumni Association. They just automatically enroll you into it forever after you graduate. So what they're really saying is they just have a bunch of people who have graduated from that university. They don't have an alumni association at all. There's no barrier to entry, none. So every time a Penn State alumnus or alumna joins the Alumni Association, it is a finger directly in the eye of those frauds and liars at Notre Dame.
As a lifelong Penn State fan, nothing brings me more pleasure than to stick it to Notre Dame. So,
amen. Amen.
Bro. Yeah, I didn't even know that. I didn't even know that they make that claim. I would be surprised that they are as large as they claim to be. But
well, probably if you talk to anyone from Notre Dame, they're probably embarrassed to say it to your face. You know, because they all know. They know that it's fake. Well,
that's why Penn Staters always lawyer it. They say we are the largest dues-paying alumni association.
For sure.
So sometimes that might drop off in parlance, but that part is accurate.
I say dues-paying all the time. I always do it to stick it to the Fighting Irish. Who I wish we would play again in football, though. I would still love to renew that rivalry.
Boy, didn't we have some great games against them?
Amazing.
I remember, what was it, like 88 or 89 in the snow?
Craig Fayak, baby.
Yeah, the 21-20 game.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, and then I remember one time, I was probably like 85 or 86. I think Massimo Manca hit like a 55-yard field goal just to run the score up on them at the end. We were blowing them out, but I remember how it rained all day. And so you're sitting in the stadium with rain on you, but it was cold enough to freeze. And so that when you stood up, ice went flying everywhere off of you. So, yeah. Yeah, good times. There's also heartbreaks. We won't talk about those.
I'm just thinking about how nice it must have been to be able to experience a Penn State football game where, just to kind of twist the knife, you kick a late 55-yard field goal and you don't have to read about it on Twitter for the next week. All the, you know, kind of commentators who are angry about it and, you know, like Notre Dame fans calling Joe classless or whatever. Oh, man, I wish we could go back to those days.
Massimo got in that live line like me and Mike. He was doing us a favor. Every point matters to someone. That's the important thing you learn about football is every point matters to someone.
Absolutely. You're right there. The over was good. The over was good in that game.
Paul, I think congratulations are ordered, not to change the subject, but your recent graduation from the Pennsylvania State University.
Absolutely. Yes. I'm a member of the class of 2020 now. It has been long deferred. As you guys know, my dad's class of 72. So I felt like I grew up in a Penn State family, but for a variety of reasons, didn't go there as an undergrad. And then when I had the chance to come back, you know, a lot of people were like, well, why did we hire an outsider? And I'd never felt like that I wasn't a Penn Stater until I came back. And so I say, you know what, I'll go ahead and I'll get a degree. And and I did it. It was not easy. I mean, it was time consuming to do it while having a full-time job. I have great admiration for all of those alumni coming out of World Campus and doing what they're doing. But it's, it's great to have that number behind my name. I put it immediately the next day, right in my email signature.
Yes. I got my first Penn Stater magazine the other day in the mail. And yeah, you know, Paul always has a letter when you first open the front page, and it finally said Paul Clifford, comma 20G. And I'm that made me so happy. All the that I've given you and others have given you over the last however many years about not being an alum, even though you're a better Penn Stater than many alums. But now you are one. Now we all are one. Mike got his little honorary hanging up back there.
Yep. That's right. That's right.
Chris and I somehow managed to graduate.
You twice, Kevin, or three times, really, for you, technically, wow. Right? Thrice.
Two undergraduate degrees and a law degree. Yeah, I only really worked for the law degree though. The other two were just sort of they just occurred somehow.
They happened.
I'm still paying for them, but yeah. I guess that was.
I was there that night that Mike Herr got his honorary degree. I got to sit at the table with his family. And boy, if there's a more deserving honorary alumnus of Penn State, I don't know who it is, but guy who just bleeds blue and white and is beloved by this institution, by this town, by everybody who comes to know him. And so it was great to see him be recognized for all that.
Thank you, Paul. That was a great time. That was really a very special night. That was, that's right. You did sit at our table. That was fun. That was a lot of fun.
So, yeah, it was.
That night, everyone was asked to give a 2 or 3 minute speech. And, I was sort of nervous about that. This is before the obligatory stuff. Now I'm not nervous. but after I heard the first 4 or 5 speeches, I said, oh, they're nothing. Mine's going to be a lot better. I was my confidence grew the more I heard. So it was fun. It was a good time.
Good man, Mike. I like that. I like that. I like the competitiveness coming out. That's great. Yeah. Well done. So, Paul, Mike, you're stepping on my transition here every time.
Sorry,
go for it.
I have a question.
No, do it. Do
I have a question. Okay. For Paul and Kevin. All right. Paul, what does Kevin have over on you? Because I know firsthand when we went to Pittsburgh to the National Wrestling Tournament, there were two things that we had no tickets for, but yet we got into these events. I'm not sure. It was the Penn State alumni events. I'm not sure on Kevin or you. You helped us get. I know one of the venues. I don't know what the other one. Remember that, Kevin? We were standing outside.
Yes, it's real. Recognize real, Mike. And that's the one thing. Chris didn't mention that part of joining the alumni association also pays for a plethora of open bars and festivals. And if Paul can attest. I don't miss those. Even if I'm not invited, we end up in there somehow.
We invite ourselves, which is all right.
I mean, so the beauty of Alumni Council is there's like 274 members, and they don't really know.
I'm sorry,
2,074 members, and they don't really know who's still on it or who's rotated off. So I'm pretty sure like most of those people still think I'm on it. So I just roll in, like nod at Paul, nod at the few people who will know that I'm not on it anymore, but still like me, and then just dig right into the ice cream and the beer. It's but of course, when you're with Mike the Mailman, like you can get in anywhere. There's not a party that turns you down.
I sort of presumed, Mike, that you were the ticket
those. Exactly what it was. Mike was the golden ticket.
Yeah.
Oh, Mike. Okay. I didn't know that.
Now, you know what? Kevin has been had been on council for a while, so. You know, it's part of folks who are on council. We like to make sure that we take care of our volunteers. But Kevin Horn's the kind of guy who makes a great contribution, productive contribution when he's asked, right? And then kind of gives off this persona as if he doesn't care about. He doesn't care. He doesn't want anyone to know all the good things that he has actually done behind the scenes. But. But he was a great volunteer on Alumni Council. Has been a great Penn Stater, and so I'm glad that you were with him, Mike. That we can let you in.
Oh yeah,
that was a fun event. Hanging out with David Taylor and my dad, who's a big wrestling fan. My dad, he wouldn't let David Taylor alone all night. I felt bad for the guy.
That's right.
This is good.
In fact, David Taylor at that luncheon, he spilled the beans about Penn State was going to host the Olympic trials before the athletic director said anything about it.
Oh, Sandy was pissed. That was
she was. She really was.
Yeah, little did she know.
Right. It didn't happen anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
It's going to. It's going to. Lord willing.
Yep.
So.
This is good. I didn't know I was going to bring Paul on to fluff both of you guys up so much. I wish Noble was here because we can just sort of look at each other and laugh because we know what total frauds the both of you are. But it's good. You know, we allow the public to think differently. So that's good. Keep putting it out there, Paul.
If there are any two paths to being fraudulent that could be so different, it's the path that Mike Kerr and Kevin Horn have taken, right?
Very good.
Yeah.
So let me try and bump this thing, nudge it somewhat more onto the rails. Because I just want to go back, Paul, a little bit to talk about how you've referenced a few times how you grew up a Penn State fan. You followed the team. You did not go here for your bachelor's degree, but grew up in a family of other folks who did. Can you just give listeners a little bit more of the backstory of what got you from where you came from to Happy Valley to CEO of the Alumni Association? How does such a process play out?
Yeah, I'll try to do it quickly. So I grew up in northeastern Pennsylvania. If people know where 80 and 81 crisscross, a little town called Cunningham. It's in the Hazleton area. So I grew up there. So it was about a 2-hour ride down for football games, a 4-hour ride home after the games with traffic. And, what I didn't realize, Chris, until I was much older and actually until even I had kids and started thinking about this way that, you know, my dad was a big Penn State football fan. But he used Penn State and he used those trips to Happy Valley to build family. It was more important for him to be in that car, the 2 hours down to have my brother and I and have those conversations and the time that it took us to get home to have all that time together. I think it was kind of the way that he knew to develop close relationships with us. And so, all of my memories of falls in Happy Valley have been great because of time spent with my dad. From there, I didn't get into Penn State University Park. I got into Penn State Hazleton. And if you know anything about where I just described where I grew up, I had to drive by the Hazleton campus to get to my high school every day.
Sure.
And so I wanted to go away. I wanted to have a 4-year college experience. And so I went to Seton Hall my first year. I was the manager for the basketball team there. Seton Hall just wasn't was a little too much for me at that time in terms of a lot of things, in terms of being prepared to be away from home and study and kind of do all the things that I needed to do to be successful in college. And so I transferred to Bloomsburg. Like a day before I was supposed to go back to Seton Hall. And when I told my dad I didn't want to go back, maybe I'm going to take a semester off. He's like, no way, get down to Bloomsburg and see if they'll take you. And so I went down to Bloomsburg and was able to get in. They renewed my admission from when I was a high school senior. And my brother dared me to go out for the football team. And so I tried out for the football team there at Bloomsburg and made it as a walk-on. And so what was supposed to be just a short pit stop there before I would eventually transfer to Penn State turned into 3 years there and lifelong friends and met a woman who is my wife today. And so
ultimately my Penn State
experience was deferred.
Let me stop you right there for a minute because I got to find it. So you played on the Bloomsburg football team.
I did.
What position?
I was 90 days as a college football player. Mm-hmm. I was a kicker. So I could kick the football a little bit. I went out for the team and I made it. Now, little did I know that Division II football teams actually need bodies, right? So even though I made it as a kicker, and kicking practice at the Division II level is you go out, you stretch, you go and you kick over in the auxiliary field for about 15 or 20 minutes, right? And then your practice is done. That's essentially what a kicker's practice looks like, unless you're the third or fourth string kicker like I was. And then you have to go find the scout team defense coach, and they tell you where to stand on the field to simulate the other team's defense. And so they needed a body essentially for defense. That's why I made the team. And so I would run the opposing team's defense so that my teammates had a good look to practice against. That's how I got my college, my nickname in college. My nickname in college was Rudy. it was the same year the movie came out, and but you know what, I learned a whole lot about what it means to be a team, how to play a role, how everybody's role is important, you know, what it means to be there for another person, you know, all those things that that are the cliches that that we hear, you know, football players talk about. It's real. It's those guys are my best friends now. We still stay in touch, and but I played for 1 year, and then after that 1 year, I decided I was done with football, and I became the mascot. So I was the Bloomsburg Husky for the next 2 years. And I actually got on the field more as the Husky than I ever did as a football player.
Sure.
Yeah. But then after Bloomsburg, went to graduate school, went to Millersville, worked in their alumni relations office there. That's when I kind of caught the bug for what I do today in terms of trying to mobilize alumni around what they love most about their alma maters. So I went from Millersville for a short time, got my first job, my first real job in the real world at James Madison University. And then from JMU to UConn for 4 years, from UConn to East Carolina. And we were down there for 10 years at East Carolina. And then 2 years at the University of Oregon before being able to come home to Pennsylvania and work at Penn State.
So basically, from what I hear, all the schools that you've attended as a student, the basketball program has gotten consecutively worse, right? So we start at Seton Hall, a powerhouse. Then you go to Bloomsburg, right? And then finally end up at Penn State. So it goes from best to worst in quality of programs. I don't know where you're going to go after this, but hopefully you retire here, because I don't know what other program you can find to continue that trend.
Hey, so let me tell you, when I was at Seton Hall, Terry DeHaer was the star All-American there.
Wow, what a great name. Good name, Jack. Yeah,
Terry DeHaer was there, and I lived on the same hall as Danny Hurley. So Danny and I used to walk to class in the morning. And they were like number three, number four in the country that year. Then like 1990, it would have been the 1992-93 basketball season. Yeah, so they were good. But when I was at UConn, we won a national championship there. The women won four national championships. But yeah, you're right. I didn't see real basketball then until I left East Carolina and went to Oregon, who had a good run there. And now here at Penn State, look, two out of the last 3 years, we have been hot. So don't give me any crap about Penn State basketball. If anything, I'll take credit for the upshoot.
Sorry, there you go. No, sorry, that's smart. That's smart. I like that.
Upshoot. Okay.
Upshoot. I don't know. We're a program on the rise. We were at NCAA. We were going to the NCAAs this year. Next year, we're going to build off that. I'm ready for a Final Four, Kevin.
You are paid good money to say things like that. And I appreciate that, Paul.
So now you're back here in Happy Valley. Come here from Oregon. So real quickly, just talk to me a little bit about Eugene and what the experience is like out there.
Eugene is unlike any other place we have ever lived. It is, it's unique, right? The people are interesting. The lifestyle is interesting. You know, half the people who work at the University of Oregon ride their bike to works every day. And so it was definitely kind of laid back West Coast, kind of tree huggers, if you will. And we 100% bought into it. It was, if you could get over, you know, 8 months of rain, then you'd love living there. It was fantastic. The university, is probably as progressive as a university as there is in the country, right? There, their tagline or their motto is that our tradition is no tradition, right? That if they're not constantly changing, then they feel like they're falling behind. And so it was a really interesting and fun time to live there. The 2 years I was there were the 2 years that Marcus Mariota was the quarterback of the football team there. And so we were there for the Heisman when he won the Heisman Trophy, and they ended up losing to Ohio State in the national championship game that year. So that was a fun run.
Eugene, I've been to Eugene once, and I agree it was strange. I flew in on Christmas Day. I was doing like a Pacific Coast trip, and it was like there were bars open on Christmas Day, which would not happen in State College.
Right.
And I don't say this to be offended. There was like 100 homeless people like hanging out
everywhere
outside the bar, which I don't mind at all. Look, I'm a public defender, many of my clients, but it was just like in a college town. You know, Penn State's homeless people are legends, right? We got McClanaman and like, you know, several others. And Eugene, it was just like the whole town. So it was like me at the bar and my girlfriend and then 100 homeless people. They were all like so friendly. Like they gave you directions. Like they helped me get to my car. Like it was great. But weird place for sure. I went to all the stuff like Steve Prefontaine's Rock and all the running places and great campus. Like I enjoyed my, you know, 36 hours in town for sure.
Yeah, you look, Kevin, you know, you touched on it, and Eugene, there's a thing, like, it's homeless by choice, right? These are homeless. Some of them are faculty members at the university. They live in these $700 Patagonia tents, and that's their like, bohemian lifestyle that they that they live. I mean, certainly that's there awesome. Is a population that is homeless not by choice, and I don't want to shed light on all the folks that you saw there, but or make light of it, but yeah, it's definitely interesting. The neighborhood we lived in, you know, it's like you walk down the street in State College, right, and you see a wrestling national champion. You walk down the street in Eugene, Oregon, and around the corner, Ashton and Breanne Eaton lived. So Ashton Eaton is the world's greatest athlete, right, 2-time decathlon gold medalist, and Mo Farah lived in our neighborhood, who's the 2-time 5,000 and 10,000 meter gold medalist from Great Britain. Galen Rupp lived in our neighborhood. So it was, we were the least athletic people who lived in our neighborhood.
Okay. So you're out there in the Pacific Northwest. It's very chill. A lot of rain, a lot of homeless professors apparently, but super cool place. Very good university. You got Marcus Mariota. Seems like a good place to put down roots and settle down, right?
Yeah, right.
And then what happens?
So, yeah, we actually thought that was kind of the end of the road for us. And then a headhunter calls and asks me, have you ever thought about working at Penn State? And I said,
wow. Have I, sir?
Wow.
And I said, only every day since I've been like 7 years old. And they said, well, we were wondering if you'd be interested in, at the time they were calling it the executive director of the Alumni Association, or the CEO of the Penn State Alumni Association. And I had only been at Oregon for 9 months. And I said, you know, I'm absolutely interested, but it's not the time for me to leave here. And so I hung up the phone, immediately regretted it. 6 months later, the phone rings again. And the first search had failed. And they asked, you know, is now the right time? And I said, you know, I'm never going to get this. I never thought I'd get the chance once. I'm going to jump at the chance the second time. And went through the process and ultimately was chosen. And it was I was as shocked as anybody because I never thought that Penn State would hire a non-alum for that role. And I was so grateful that they did.
Not that you haven't been great, Paul, and you were completely qualified, but you happened to come upon Penn State at a time where having any connection to the school whatsoever when they were hiring anyone was seen as a non-starter. So I think we are very lucky to have you, and I think that I've never heard of someone's stars aligning more directly than yours did in that exact moment. Because little did they know that they were getting someone. I mean, many of the not to dump on anyone in particular, but many of the people that were running the association or it on council or whatever were far less interested in the spirit and the. Well-being might be too strong a word, but certainly the spirit of Penn State than you were, having had no degree. So I don't think they quite knew that what they were in for, but I think they now know, and we're all glad for it.
Yeah, look, I remember I was sitting on my chair in my home in Greenville, North Carolina, with tears running down my eyes, watching what was happening there in 2011. I remember like it was yesterday. We were planning. We always, wherever we lived, we'd always come back for a football game. And I had started bringing my son back for one game a year. And it just so happened that the game that year that we picked was the Nebraska game. And so, and look, it was Penn State was on a roll at that point. And then everything kind of unraveled that week. And yeah, we all know the story, but what was planned to be like a big family celebration coming back for that Nebraska game, rising to the, we would have been number one in the Big Ten after that victory, really took a different turn for us and what that game actually meant to Penn State. And so I wouldn't have wanted to have been anywhere else either way, and was actually glad that I was there to be there with my dad. But it was definitely a different feeling that day.
Yeah. And you haven't gotten as sued, Paul, since you joined. So you've already done better than some folks in the past due to the, to the scandal.
Yes. Well done.
Anyway, that's as close I'll get to the sun on that one with you, Paul, until the recording goes off. What's up, Chris? Where do we want to go from here?
It makes me happy, Paul, to hear that you were up here for that game. I mean, I'm sorry in a way that you had to experience it. That was not a lot of fun. I can feel my doldrums sinking in just mentioning it briefly. So we're not going to spend a lot of time on it. But you know what? It's a thing. It happened. And if it doesn't kill you, it only makes you stronger. So here we are. Go ahead, Kev.
I was just going to say, when Paul first came to Penn State, I was shocked because first of all, I found his Twitter. So that was already something that was relatively new for relatively high ranking Penn State folks.
Yes.
And then I immediately reached out when he got into town. I think I probably got lunch or dinner or something with Paul within his first week or two in town, having not even gotten response. I was a student journalist at the time. Having not even gotten a single response from anyone at the Alumni Association for years before that. And then Paul lands, and then within 3 days I'm getting dinner with the guy and did many more times until his wife moved to town 6 months later. But just kidding. Jenny's great. But I consider myself one of Paul's first friends in town. We hung out a lot those first few months, but that was a completely new thing for like, someone of Paul's level to like actually respond to people and engage with them in a productive way and be transparent and just like about the town, which was a very new thing. So I think the association needed that at that point in time and does and continues to.
If you know, Kevin, if I'm doing my job the right way, everyone should be able to feel like they can be honest with me and talk to me about how they feel about Penn State, and that I would then in turn be an honest broker back to the university to tell them, here's the range of things that I'm hearing from alumni, right? And so if I'm not listening to a certain segment of alumni, whether it's what I want to hear or not, I'm not entirely doing the job that I'm here to do. And that's have my finger on the pulse of what's important to Penn Staters and be able to share that with my partners at the university.
Paul, remind me, you took over when?
2016, okay. January of 2016.
January so. 2016. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's been, about 4 years on the job for you. A lot of interesting stuff in that time period, in higher education at Penn State and in the world. But I want to go back to those first several months. Kevin just alluded to it. You're moving your family here. You're going across the country. You're going from a place whose motto is our tradition is no tradition to Penn State, right, which is very much not that. And I want to unpack a little bit what your acclimation period was like. What was it like making that transition? And also, I'm curious from the perspective of somebody who grew up, because you and I kind of grew up similar in that we both had Penn State as a presence in our lives. Like the yeah. part of the state where we both grew up, the influence of Penn State was hard to avoid. Penn State right. football was everywhere. Everybody loved and worshiped Joe Paterno. You absolutely had, if not an alum in your family, in your close circle of friends, in your community, right. you were maybe taught by an alum or mentored or coached by one. So what was it like kind of taking that background but not having had the student experience? And just take us through all of that, what it was like plugging into that through the first, you know, whatever, 12, 18 months.
Yeah, so I talked to you about a little bit about my career progression. But when I came to Penn State, it was actually the first time that I had ever served a constituency that had people that I knew, that had people that I cared about, right? That people that if I were to fail, that I would be letting people down, that like my dad, right? Like my teachers who, and so it was actually, it was more personal coming back to Penn State than any of those other jobs were. Now look, don't get me wrong. I was the biggest cheerleader for the Oregon Ducks. I was the biggest East Carolina Pirate. But it was more personal to come home to Penn State. And so that was the I kind of felt and still feel a little bit to today that that there is maybe that pressure that, you know, people I care about are watching what I'm doing, and I want to make sure that I'm always making them proud. And so yeah, that's, you know, that was one of the big things to overcome, and to kind of learn that, boy, that's a new feeling to have professionally. And then, you know, the rate of change, look, change happens at Penn State. There's no doubt about that. It just happens in a different way than it has happened at other places for me. And so part of my growth in this role has been really learning how to affect change, learning how to get the change that I think needs to happen for an alumni association to continue to be relevant in the 21st century, to continue to be relevant to our most recent graduates. I had to slow down. I had to be a lot more thoughtful. I had to think about who could help me get to where we need to go. And really that was, there were some bumps and there were some growing pains for me personally and professionally, if I'm being honest and maybe even a little vulnerable. But I think I'm a lot better today and a lot better for Penn State today than I was on day one, because I was open to kind of learning and growing and trying to be the leader that Penn State needs me to be.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing makes my heart flutter, Paul, than Penn State people coming back to Penn State. And I think Penn State has such a great tradition of that happening. I mean, you're only the 11th guy to hold your position, and the two guys before you, I mean, Ridge Riley was Mr. Penn State, right? Like right. that, he stayed here for decades and decades and decades. The reason we know so much about Penn State football during the first part of the century is because of him, and died in Joe Paterno's house. It doesn't get any more Penn State than that. Right. And then Roger Williams was here forever, got 3 degrees from Penn State, wrote history right. books about Atherton and Pugh. And then you're here after growing up in a Penn State family, coming back. That happened with your boss, Rich Bundy, who was right. grew up in the Bundy family and left, went to Vermont and then came back. Eric Barron didn't want the job at first, so he was turned it down 3 or 3 times. Finally, him having been a professor here for so long and a associate dean or dean or whatever he was, he's like, well, I got to come back to State College. You know, that's where I consider my home. I just love, and those people tend to be very effective, much more so than the people that just sort of pass this place by for a few years, be it in those positions or even at the post office, Mike.
Thanks.
Doesn't.
Yeah, you know, that was also part of the pressure that I felt, though, Kevin. Too. I mean, Roger Williams was somebody like we were in the same professional organization, and so I would always seek out Roger because he was the Penn State guy, and I wanted to talk to Roger about what's going on at Penn State and how's the football team going to be and all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, and then kind of knowing who Ridge Riley was, right, that I get to sit in the chair that those two and others who came before us, Diane Ryan and Peter Weiler, who has just recently passed away tragically, but that I get to sit in that seat is something that I think about often, and something I don't take for granted because those folks are giants, and that weighs on me.
So let's talk about some positive stuff. The conversation. This is good. I mean, I'm loving it, but I don't want to make it too heavy. This is obligatory, after all, for God's sake. So, Paul, why don't you talk about what do you view as some of the positive changes or developments in, let's just say, either the Alumni Association in particular or the alumni's relationship with the institution since you've gotten here?
Yeah, you know, we've really had a mindset since 2016 that our job isn't to connect people to the Alumni Association, right? It's to connect people to what they love about Penn State. The Alumni Association is the conduit that we use to do that. But when we started focusing on, hey, what do you love about Penn State and how can we strengthen that love? How can we strengthen that connection? I think really grounded us and made us more alumni centered than membership or any other metric that we were centered on. And now we're actually starting to see the impact of that because we're actually starting to see growth in membership this year. And so we've kind of reversed some trends in that regard. You know, I think in over the past 5 years, we have come by leaps and bounds ahead in terms of how we take a look at technology and how we try to leverage technology to connect more people and to bring more people with us. And really, COVID-19 has taught us a big lesson, and that we actually have accelerated our digital first mindset. It was going to be a big part of our next strategic plan. And COVID-19 said, you know what? Forget your strategic plan. You got to start doing this now. You're not going to be relevant. So,
yeah, you're right.
And then also how we really started to take a look at and ask, what are the main drivers of young alumni participation? How can we make sure that the young alumni have a voice that's represented on Alumni Council, in our chapters, in a number of different ways, so that while we have built this great alumni association that has been so supportive of Penn State over the past 150 years, we want to make sure that the next generation of supportive alumni are primed and ready to go, and that they feel that same connection to the Alumni Association, and just for much different reasons. We felt that if we weren't focused on that and the reasons why they would connect, that we would lose that generation of alumni. And so Kevin can attest to, I mean, we've spent an awful lot of time talking about how to get young alumni involved and actually getting them involved and putting them in leadership positions and helping them to drive forward programmatically through our communications and through the services that we deliver to alumni.
It's been robust, Paul. That's the word.
It has been
the Young Alumni Committee. I remember going up in front of council and saying, like, the only thing young alums care about is like it being affordable and free beer, and that was pretty much a big hit. I still stand by that. You've done a good job delivering on that for me, at least. But but it's true. There's a standing committee. Is it that standing committee existed for a long time? And I think most committees are useless, as you know, Paul. Not on your alumni council, but just in the world in general. But that one less useless than most. And I'm biased because I was on it. But
Chris, Paul talks about all the pressure coming back here. Well, just think about me when I go to speak to some alumni chapters. Sometimes I'm following Paul and I'm saying, uh-oh, this is going to be a tough act to follow. And I said, but I found that a lot of alumni, Paul, that they are searching for younger associations, like in Binghamton or Connecticut, whatever. They're looking for the younger alumni and they're reaching out to these kids, but But once you get to these little banquets they have, they're so Penn State. I love it. So much Penn State. It's great. It's really fun to do that. I love speaking to these places. It's great. But when I have to follow you, a lot of pressure. A lot of pressure.
No, that's funny to hear that, Mike, because I never want to follow you. I mean, because Mike gets up there and he's so lovable, and everybody just wants to come up and hug Mike and get Mike's autograph on his issue of the Penn Stater. And
Yeah,
so...
It's a fun time. I always keep a Sharpie in my pocket when I'm out with Mike the Mailman.
Absolutely.
I've taken a lot of pictures, provided the Sharpie many, many times. It's good stuff. But occasionally Mike gets us in places. He gets us free drinks. It's good stuff. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Very reciprocal. Yeah. So, Paul, explain to me a little bit about what your job actually entails. I don't really know what the CEO of any alumni association, much less the only one I care about, does. Like, are you here in town a lot? Are you traveling? What's that like?
Well, for the past 3 months, I've been off the road.
Sure. But
and actually, Chris, I've actually learned a lot in the last 3 months in terms of, you know, I felt pressure, as you know, I do travel a lot, and I felt pressure to be around the country where alumni are to make sure that they can have that connection to somebody from Penn State kind of visiting their area. Mike can tell you.
In a year when there's not a global pandemic and social order isn't collapsing, like what, how many days out of the year are you on the road approximately?
Probably 50, 55 hotel nights, if you will. So it probably works out to be two or three or four nights a month. We go to away football games, right? And that's always a lot of fun. But we also
That is prime sneak into events you didn't pay for season is away football games, because you guys throw some good ones. And I haven't paid for a single one in about a decade.
Kevin, you're outing yourself here. Now my staff is going to have your picture up looking for this guy. Do not let this guy in.
But see, I love your staff, right? Like, I know how to grease the wheel. We're fine. They know the deal.
That's so funny. And then chapter events. We have some of our chapters, you know, shout out to like Philly and New York and Chicago and D.C. and they do some events that are world class. They raise a couple $100,000 a year for Thon up in New York City. The Blue White Gala out in Pittsburgh that raises money for Four Diamonds. I mean, these are events that have 300 and 400 people at it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what a lot of my travel looks like. But look, I'm responsible for delivering program services and communications to 700,000 alumni and valued services to our 174,000 members. And I do that in partnership with the 74 member team that we have, and we manage a budget, and I work with our alumni council, which is robust and rather large at 108 members. That's what a CEO of an alumni association does. It's working with your governance volunteers. It's trying to provide leadership and guidance to your team and to make sure that the program service and communications that we are delivering to our alumni are relevant to them.
Well, Paul, I am watching my clock here because I want to be aware of your time. Thank you for being with us and being so generous with us. I always say this to all the guests, as long as we haven't discussed the gin, turned you off, we will gladly have you back, because there's plenty of other alumni association stuff, Penn State stuff I want to get into with you. But before we close out here, I can't let you go without talking a little football. We're trying very hard to parse it out for ourselves, frankly, because I don't know till we get to September. I don't know how much actual football there's going to be to talk about. So, we're trying to piecemeal it out. Let's just, for the moment, since it is June, assume that at least the games are going to be played. I don't know who's going to be in the stadium to watch them, but they'll be on TV. We can watch them on TV. I was going to say come to Happy Valley and watch them. That'd be good for the economy. I don't know so much. Maybe it's a super spreader thing. I don't know. The games are going to be played. What do you think about the team we're bringing back this year? I know you're a big football guy.
I think the team we're bringing back is going to be tough. I think we have a solid quarterback who's a leader of the team.
No relation.
But his mother and I are awful proud of him. I think Sean coming back provides great leadership. I think our running backs are from first string to fourth string are as deep as any running back pool in the country. And we might have the best defense in the nation. At all three levels. I mean, when you take a look at the guys that we have up front, you take a look at Micah Parsons and patrolling the middle, and then the great cornerbacks and safeties that we have coming back. I mean, defense is going to win us a lot of games this year. But I'm excited. I hope we get to see them perform at their best, because we know a lot of times there's energy in a stadium that student athletes feed off of. And, you know, I wonder what effect that might have when there's potentially less people, just speculating, but potentially less people in the stadium. Will it have that same kind of energy? Where will their focus? And I don't worry about their focus or motivation, because I mean, these guys, they prepare and they have a job to do, and our coaches are among the best in the country at getting them ready to play. There's a lot to be said about the atmosphere that you play into.
Yeah, it's going to be a factor. I mean, there's no question. There is no question that is going to affect teams all over the country. I mean, Brandon and Goon talk about it all the time, that when they would go and play in places like IU and Northwestern, that stunk. Right. Those tiny stadiums that are half full, there's no juice in the place, and you've got to, you know, create your own motivation. And now to have to do that every single week, I think it's going to be strange. If we're looking at mostly empty stadiums, Paul, are you pro pump in fake crowd noise? How do you feel about that?
I'm definitely pro anything that gives us an advantage. And so if it's crowd noise, if it's music, if it's I still think we need to have atmosphere there.
Yeah,
that's a question I wouldn't ask me. I would ask the student athletes that question and
sure
what they want that experience to be. So,
very political answer. Good job. Way to skirt. I don't know, man. I am having a tough time imagining fake fan noise. like a laugh track on a sitcom inside the stadium. I don't know. I'm at a tough time. But mentally, maybe that's just white noise that the players need. I don't know.
I don't know about fan noise. Like that's one where I might agree with you, but definitely have to have loud music. Definitely have to have, that kind of stuff being pumped in to have the atmosphere for the players. So, absolutely.
So I'm going to let these guys get some parting questions in, and then we're going to let you have a parting shot. Again, before we do that, though, alumni.psu.edu is your home for the Penn State Alumni Association, the world's largest dues-paying alumni association. There are all kind of benefits and things. I probably don't take advantage of 75% of them. I still need to figure this stuff out. But there's a lot of great stuff. It's worth it. Even if you don't want to just do it to support Penn State, which you absolutely should, it's worth it for the Penn Stater alone. Penn Stater's awesome. Penn Stater magazine. I love to get that. And as I have said before, help us undo the vile lies being spread by the University of Notre Dame. These total frauds, this fake news nonsense. Alumni.psu.edu, join the Penn State Alumni Association. Final question, Mike the Mailman.
Paul, when you played at Bloomsburg,
right?
What was your number?
I was 00.
Oh, you were?
No way.
<zero. laughs>
That is amazing.
That I wouldn't have guessed that. Okay.
Practice jersey. It was a practice jersey, though. Let's remember, I never got on the field. So,
okay.
Yeah, 00.
But it was not number 93.
It was not number 93. No.
Okay. Just checking.
I had a better haircut too. Yeah.
Kevin Horn.
See, the only questions worth asking are off air.
Yeah,
I'm not a journalist anymore, so I don't put Paul on the spot. I'm just a little miffed he doesn't have his Mike's Hard Root Beer to pass this show by like usual. I don't know.
Yeah, Kevin's a connoisseur of fine beers, and he always gives me a hard time because I'm like, my beers are maybe not as hard as he likes to go.
People are.
It just occurred to me that I think the last time I saw you, we were at the high point of the Penn State basketball season after that Iowa win at the Palestra in Philly. It's been that long just because of everything that happened. I don't know, man. I'm just hopeful that we get through this quickly. I'm hoping for at least some fans. I'll be begging to use your box if they don't sell tickets. I just want to get back. I want to get back to indulging in alumni association open bars and buffets that I'm not invited to. That's what I'm looking forward to. But I think we're at least a year off from that.
I think so too. And hey, and you bring up an important point. If we aren't at capacity in the stadium, like if we don't have more than 50% people allowed to come to games, I'm not going to use that box. I don't feel right being in the stadium if everyone can't be there.
Well, that's fine with me. I'm happy to take your seat. Thank you, Paul. I appreciate that offer.
Gotta keep the streak alive, Kevin. You gotta keep your streak alive.
I don't maintain those same ethics. If there's a single ticket sold to a non-family member, I will be in there. Right. Even if I have to buy some kid's ID card for $5,000 or whatever.
That's so far. You know, Bucciagano, you know, Chris, who's the first person who would be sniping at me on Twitter if I was sitting in that box and he was sitting at home?
Kevin. There you go.
No, because I would definitely not mean it in that way. I would be making fun of you, but I would certainly have done the same thing had I been in your shoes.
Right.
So what do you think? How far is Penn State basketball going in the tournament this next season?
I think we make the tournament. Look, I think he's got momentum. I think he's building a team and building a program. I mean, there are some players. I love watching Isaiah Brockington, Seth Lundy. Seth Lundy is going to step in. Obviously, he can't replace Lamar, right? But Seth's going to step in nicely there. Look, the drop off after a superstar graduates is becoming smaller and smaller at Penn State, right? Tony graduated, Lamar picked up. Lamar's graduating. Somebody's going to step up and take his place. And so, yeah, we're definitely. Look, I can't. We're going to the Final Four. I'm never going to predict. I'm never going to predict any less than that. So.
Again, what you're well paid, Paul. Thank you for
you guys. You guys are the experts. You guys can make those prognostications. I'm just an optimist.
And guess what? I predicted they would not make the tournament, and I was correct. So let's hear the haters can come all they want.
Chris, can I ask Paul another question?
Mike, it's your world, okay. Of course.
Paul, did your dad go to many Bloomsburg University wrestling matches?
Wrestling matches, no. He came out to some football games if it didn't conflict with Penn State. And I just want to be clear. My dad went to Penn State games instead of coming to my game. So.
Okay. Just checking.
Yeah, but no, look, Bloomsburg wrestling at that time was
Bloomsburg
tough.
Bloomsburg and Lock Haven has were the biggest rivalries. We used to go down to Hess's Bar. There was a Hess's Bar.
Oh, yeah, Bill Hess's Bar. Yeah, we used to go to Bill Hess's.
Yeah, we go down there. It was great. I love it. Like Kevin, I like going the away events. There's a lot of fun. You see a lot of different people. It's a good time.
Yeah, we had some national champions. We had some Olympians, Ricky and Rocky Bonomo. Shorty Hitchcock.
Shorty Hitchcock, what a guy. What a good wrestler. What a great – I saw him wrestle many times. Yep, Shorty was good.
It's like a Lock Haven wrestling, like, royalty, right? Like, when we were at the NCAAs in Pittsburgh a year and a half ago, I sat with Mike in the Lock Haven. We bought tickets in the Lock Haven section because they were cheaper than the Penn State section. And it was like I was sitting next to the queen. Like, there's a line going up and down the portal of Lock Haven people being like, oh, Mike, you know, I think he was taking some action. But it was something. It was something to see.
That's the way to do it. Mike, we should run over there and catch a match together. Arizona State has come up to wrestle over there, and I've wanted to go over to see them, but we should catch a match. But
I'd love to do that. That'd be fun. Yeah, I like
Kevin. That's how my dad gets NCAA wrestling tickets. My dad is a donor to Rider Athletics, because Rider's got they still have a wrestling program.
Yeah, they have a good wrestling program. Yep.
But he makes his annual gift so he can buy NCAA wrestling tickets through Rider instead of through Penn State, because he can't get them through Penn State.
It's like the equivalent of having Pitt season tickets for two of the last 4 years. Yeah, that's exactly
right. Yeah. But think about it, like limited numbers in the stadium, right? If we're going to have, you know, I read an article the other day that was predicting 20% in the stadium. Pitt would love that. They'd love if 20% of their stadium was full.
Oh, the tickets and price would stay the same. Yeah, I don't know, Paul. And we don't need to go down this road, but you probably know stuff you can't say. But I have four season tickets, right? If they're saying 20%, I mean, almost 25% of the stadium is students only. Right. And I think we can agree students deserve to go more than anyone else. But on the athletic department, they make the least amount of money on students. But the people that give the most money are also the most at risk of contracting the virus in a serious way. So if you just do an order of Nittany Lion Club points, you've got like Gertrude in there with 10,000 million points, who's like, should not be leaving the house. Whereas the healthiest people, there's no winners. And I don't envy the people that are trying to come up with all the plans now to figure out what's going to happen. But anyone who listens to this, I don't care how much it costs. I will buy your ticket if there is a way in. None of my four season tickets come through to piece together the season. So extort me, whatever. I don't care. I'm here.
Yeah, it's almost impossible to make decisions in this environment. I don't know anything. I'll be right up front to say I haven't been part of those conversations. I'm just talking about like news articles that I've read where they're predicting and trying to figure out a way that I can throw a little bit of shade on Pitt on this podcast. And that was the way that I chose to do it.
Well done.
I'll take it.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is a plan collecting a thin layer of dust about what we do with the TV show if there aren't college football games to talk about, because who knows, we're going to have a truncated season or whatever. So it is. It's weird. It is a weird time to live in. And in the midst of it, we are so happy to have had you here, Paul Clifford, CEO of the Penn State Alumni Association, with us on the Obligatory PSU podcast. You are a good Penn Stater. And I appreciate the work you are doing on behalf of Alma Mater. You are a good dude. I enjoy your company. And your wife is from Tamaqua, which I appreciate as well. That's great. So thanks for joining us. We will certainly welcome you back anytime you want to come here. The bunch of things I didn't get to ask you, we'll ask you next time. And what I will ask you, our loyal listeners, for whom we are all so appreciative, I'm so thankful we keep getting new five-star reviews when I ask for them, which is great. I don't know. It must be the quarantine. People are listening to me better. I like the new reviews. Thanks very much. So however you get your podcasts, if you're listening to what we do and you enjoy it, please spread the word. Tell your friends, your fellow Penn State fans and alumni. Give us a five-star rating. Write a glowing review if you're so inclined. And even if you hate our guts, just lie. Do the good stuff on the review and then unload. You know, like I said, send Mike the mailman an email and tell him how awful we are and how much you hate us. And join the Penn State Alumni Association. Even if you're not an alum, that's important. You can still join as a friend of Penn State. And who wouldn't want to be that? So thanks, everybody. We're back again soon. So long. Take care of yourself.
Good night.
That was the Obligatory PSU Podcast, presented by HappyValley.com. Like and follow at Obligatory PSU.
Every time you hit like and subscribe, Mike the Mailman smiles.